Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast. All right, glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show. Write down our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. So many things happening today, and we're glad you're on board. You know, no, but you're never going to ever hear that U.S. crude oil production in America has now hit an all-time high. Now, listen, I'm going to tell you something. That is a massive, massive, massive story, because that means literally millions of high-paying jobs for forgotten men and women in America. I know we talk a lot about Russia, Trump, Trump, Russia, Russia, Trump, Trump, Russia. I know that if you watch cable news, if the president, if Hope Hicks resigns, it's one big massive conspiracy that, oh, she had to resign because of A, B, C, D, E, and F, and nobody knows about it. And I'm actually somebody that has reached out and talked to Hope Hicks. And I'm not going to tell you because it was a private conversation. All I'll tell you is media speculation is, as usual, wrong. Now, the next point is that we spend so much time, because there's so much corruption in the sewer and the swamp that is Washington, D.C., that we often forget about how great things have gotten and how good things can be and what this country can be and what we can provide for future generations. We have the ability to do great, amazing, profound, deep things for the entire country and every person that's suffering and every person in poverty and every person on food stamps and every person that's been left behind and every person can listen. Like so many of you out there, I don't know in my life many people that came from money. Matter of fact, I got the best team here, and I don't know anyone in that works here on this team that came from a lot of money. Now, maybe we grew up we all have pretty much the same story. A nice small house, 50 by 100 lot, you know, good neighbors, you know, a little more. At the time, it's not like it is today where you can't let your kids out of sight for 5 seconds. It's a lot different, you know. So anyway, I literally read this today and I said, nobody's ever going to mention this today. Nobody will. But I want to mention, you know, and we got to start spending time on the good news of the day. And we got to start spending time on why is this important? You know, November's figure exceeded 10 million barrels produced daily. You know, that was in November of 1970. Here's how big this story is. U.S. crude oil production shattered a 47-year output record this past November, according to the U.S. Energy Department, as oil production from shale now continues to upend global supply patterns. Well, why do you think that the Middle East, why do you think the Saudis and the CART and OPEC and others, why do you think they reduced oil going back a couple of years ago? It was all because of shale production in the United States and a desire to run the United States out of this business. That's what their whole thing was. You know, the new record probably is not going to last. The U.S. government is forecasting we're going to hit 11 million barrels per day later this year. The president opened ANWR, Dakota Pipeline. You know, what's the other pipeline? You know, he opened them all up. Keystone Pipeline. Yeah, thank you. You know, if we would actually, now we're opening, he single-handedly saved West Virginia and the coal industry. And, you know, amazing things are going to happen out of this. Amazing jobs are going to be created. And it's smart, by the way, from a national security standpoint. Think about it. The U.S. doesn't have to worry anymore about what they're going to do in the Middle East, at least for the time being, unless America's stupid enough to retreat because they're buying the media narrative on Donald Trump. And all they want to do is attack Donald Trump. And we still have so many deep staters in there. It's ridiculous. All right, by the way, other news, we're going to get into this in more detail later in the program today. The American people get it in terms of how the government failed, and they blame the government failures and Broward County Sheriff and the FBI on this shooting down in Florida and how every sign was missed. Only 33% of Americans are blaming guns. So the American people seem to get this. It's interesting that, you know, all these groups that went out and started attacking the NRA, well, they're now hearing from NRA members that are saying in a pretty loud voice, okay, you're not understanding who we are. You know, who are the people that I've known in the NRA in my life? Every single person that I know, every single one. By the way, Trump is speaking at a summit on the opioid crisis. By the way, Kellyanne gave me an update on that last night. I've been watching this show on Netflix. I digress here for a second. And I was watching this show, and it goes from Cleveland to Atlanta to Mexico, and the production of heroin. This is why opioid use is so scary, because, you know, we now are producing. There was one particular county in Ohio where they're like producing per capita 642 OxyContin pills per person, an insane amount per year. Now, here's the problem. If you're taking Vicodin, Percocet, OxyContin, I've never taken one of those pain pills in my life. I will say I fear little in life. They scare me. They scare me because of what I've witnessed in my life. You know, you take one pill for legitimate reasons. You got a bad back. You had an operation. Anyway, and the next thing you know, smart, hardworking, intelligent people, they're hooked like that. It happens. It's scary. It happens. And we're handing these things out like they're candy. And if anyone is ever in a hospital, you know what it's like. All you have to do is say the words, oh, my back, oh, it hurts. And they want to give it to you with no questions. As a matter of fact, by law, they feel they have to as a means of managing pain. Then they got the pain management centers out there, which is just addiction centers in a lot of different ways. A lot of them are. And I know some people need it. I know it's a way to wean people off. I know it has good benefits. But I'm being practical, honest, and real about all of this. And then the next thing you do is you get addicted. You start with the pills that you got. Then the doctor finally says, all right, listen, you're probably getting addicted. I got to cut you off. And then you go on the street and you start paying $80 a pill. And then somebody will say to you, because you're desperate and you need it, you know, well, why don't you try this $10 bag of heroin? Now, the high is bigger. Now you have a huge, bigger problem, greater addiction. And you have no idea what you just put into your system, whether you're snorting it and then eventually shooting it. And so you wonder how this can happen. It's happening, and it's scary, and it's happening in small towns, and it's happening in big cities, and these drug cartels are actually targeting middle-class America and upper-middle-class America, and they're doing it successfully. There's no socioeconomic boundaries here. You got people with no money in the middle, people with a lot of money. They're all doing this crap, and it all ends up the same way in either a rehab center, a morgue. Very few people, when they get addicted, the rate of success at these rehab centers is astronomically low. And usually it takes people 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 times. And they're sincere and wanting to get better. But the pull and the drive, and I don't understand it, but I've had it explained to me, is so great they can't stop themselves. Now, at the end of the day, we all have the ability to say no to anything. We all have that ability. In other words, if not, then we're conceding a fact that I'm not willing to concede, and that would be that human beings have no control over their decision-making. I'm not buying that. If one heroin addict of 15 years can quit, that says everybody has a shot at quitting. And I don't know what, there's no secret sauce. It works differently for everybody else. You ever watch the show on A&E called Intervention? I watch that show. It breaks my heart. One addicted person literally destroys an entire family every time. Now you're going to say, well, you got to have tough love. And if your kid comes home and they're high or they've been using drugs and they're asking you for money for food, what are you going to say? Now, the right answer is you say no. The right answer is you say, get your ass out of my house. Don't come back till you're clean. And if you want to come back, these are the conditions. You get drug tested. You get a job. You finish rehab. Blah, 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 blah. And people try it, but I don't think they're misintention. I don't think that their intentions are bad. But then the kid comes on, 3 in the morning and they want a place to sleep. It's either that or the cold weather where you're worried to death they might die. Or if they're in your house, at least they're not shooting up that night. At least they're safe for that one night. And that gives you peace of mind. It's horrible. Absolutely horrific. I didn't plan on talking about this, but it literally went on. The president saying we have drug dealers who deal to hundreds of people. They don't go to jail. He's right. We don't put drug dealers in jail. I don't think the answer is put any addicts in jail, but there's got to be some penalty for them. Actually, if you put them in jail, you're doing them a favor. There should be at least within the criminal justice system a way that people that are addicted or mentally ill, when they're incarcerated, you got to be able to get them off the drugs or they're going to die. And there's a system, a medical way of getting people off drugs that I really don't know what it is. But I know they do it. I know if you go to a rehab center, what's educated me the most about this is Bob Beckel. Bob Beckel, has been, God bless him. He's doing well now, but he's been an addict his entire life in many ways. And he's described, and he spent a good part of his life helping a lot of these people. He tells me these stories. He'll go to the homes. He'll be involved in these interventions and, go to the homes and the people are alcoholics. And the idea the family's gotten together, they're going to say, okay, you go to rehab or you're out. We cut you off. That's how the meeting goes. And everybody's prepared. Everybody has their letters written. It's a very emotional scene. And Bob has been through this 1,000 times. You go to the person's house and Bob will say, okay, do you have any booze in the house? And the person, he says, inevitably will always say, absolutely not. And he says, okay, I'm going to search the house. He finds it buried inside of toilets. The way people will, the lengths and frankly, cleverness in some regards, if they would use it towards more positive aspects in life, they'd be doing well. The back of the toilet, you lift it up, they stick the booze in there. Who's ever going to open that up? He says, you will find it in places that you never, they will create holes in the wall and make it so perfect that you would never notice with the naked eye, but he finds it. It's just insane. So we do have to fix it. Anyway, I've got all the other news of the day. We got investigative. There is such a negligence in terms of our justice system. We'll get to the battle between the Attorney General Sessions and, of course, the president that's ongoing. Michelle Malkin's checking in today. Luke Rosiak has an incredible investigative report. We have the other news of the day, 800-941. Sean is on number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941. Sean, if you want to be a part of the program. We have an update about Senator Grassley and the probe into possible collusion, and this matters especially as it relates to between Hillary's campaign and Russia. Now, I know that that's not what you read every day. I know that's not what the Destroy Trump media says to you every day. Anyway, the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Charles Grassley has launched an investigation that could potentially expose collusion between Clinton's presidential campaign and Russia. Now, specifically what Grassley's doing here is now seeking information on Russian sources that provided dirt on then-candidate Donald Trump to Christopher Steele. Remember, that Hillary all paid for. This is the guy, the British spy. I thought foreign nationals weren't supposed to be involved in our politics and our elections. Anyway, so the Daily Caller puts out today, Chuck Ross is the author of this, that Grassley sent letters to the State and Homeland Security Departments yesterday seeking the visa records of this guy, Oleg Deripaska. An aluminum magnate with links to Russian Premier and President Vladimir Putin. The committee has been examining relationships between Christopher Steele and others who may have provided information or participated in the creation of his dossier. And Grassley sent letters in February to a lobbyist named Adam Waldman and Paul Hauser, London-based attorney who represents this guy, asking about their connections to Christopher Steele. Now, Grassley also asked whether this guy ever hired Steele. Now, this is an interesting line of questioning. He must know something. Anyway, in his letters, Grassley is asking, what he knows, when he knew it, and the implications of a connection between the two would be massive and significant because of Steele's 35-page report, which remains unverified and relies on information from unnamed Russian sources. So in his letter, Grassley is asking the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and the Department of Homeland Security chief for this guy's visa records, which finally makes sense. You know, there is so much. This is what's frustrating. If you read the New York Times today, they basically convict Jared Kushner of nothing to do with Trump-Russia collusion at all. But they convict him of some type of loan that he took out on one of his properties. And they make it the most corrupt. But then they, at the end, they'll say, yeah, but we are not able to verify. We are not fully able to confirm. We don't know, but we just said we knew everything. The media is so corrupt in this country. It is so abusively biased. And they've been after this man even before the election and ever since he's been elected. Now they want to undo the election, basically undo the vote of the American people. It's sickening. All right, as we roll along, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. Glad you're with us. You know, so Chuck Todd over at NBC, he's telling the White House, because Hope Hicks had mentioned, well, I might have told white lies about the president. And again, she's testifying before a House Committee on Intelligence. You're sworn to uphold the truth. And so she says, yeah, I've told white lies. Now, let me ask Linda, this is an important question. This is how I view a white lie. One day I come into work and I'm wearing something hideous, and maybe instead of a typical black shirt, maybe it's a different shirt that's like green with rainbows on it and flowers, and you're looking at me or whatever it is, or stripes, and you think it's hideous looking. Now, are you going to tell me, and you always claim to be the most honest person, are you going to actually tell me that it looks hideous, or are you going to say, well, it looks nice?
I would always tell you it looks hideous.
All right, I can name five specific instances where you have told lies.
Oh,
so
please, please name them. I look forward to that.
Okay, treat.
Never lied about that.
You're lying now about the lie.
Absolutely not.
All right, there's no point. Sunshine, I'll ask you because you're going to be you in this.
I think you look great every day no matter what.
Okay, even if I look hideous, you're not going to tell me I look hideous, right?
Even if you look like a beast.
Okay, so if Donald Trump says to a reporter, oh, he'd really like to do the interview with you, but he's got a lot of requests backed up and he's not going to be able to do it. Knowing that the president doesn't want anything to do with this reporter because of the way the reporter's been corrupt and biased. That to me is the white lie. And I'm sure Hope Hicks probably on occasion said exactly that. That is what a white lie is. Have you ever told a white lie, as we call it, whatever?
A white lie.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I tell white lies.
No, I actually think you do, and you don't want to admit it because you've got to present this image of you, which is I'm the only one that'll ever tell you the truth.
There's a couple.
So
of
privately,
times
Linda,
where you...
Linda tells me that treat no way
do
that
you know
dog
the
makes
definition
it.
Of privately.
Okay,
perhaps that's the word we should be talking about, not white lies.
Tells me
privately
that treat the dog is never going to make it through training. And then one day we're on the air.
That's not what I said.
And then one day we're on the air and I'm saying, Linda, do you think treat the dog that's being prepared to help, you know, military vets? And it's one of these dogs that Lauren in her heart is training, but you have to give up the dog. And you tell me no way the dog ever passes. And then you say, oh, no, I absolutely think treat has a great opportunity to pass. I think she's going to do it. That's what you said to me. That is called a white lie. It's not a real lie. But you proclaim that I'm the only one that'll ever tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth. I tell it straight, man. I'm the one. I'm never going to be ever, ever, ever in any way not tell you the truth.
Occasionally, I may not tell people that they don't look good in something. Occasionally, I may say something because I don't want people to, you know, hear me saying something that could maybe offend them. But on serious issues, I always tell the truth.
So on the bottom, that is not true, by the way, and you know it. But I'm not gonna break the privacy code.
You already broke it.
I didn't break it because I could.
Oh, it's done. It's broken. It's shattered on the floor.
I could take a vase and shatter it across the room, and it would be, you know, pretty.
It would be shattered.
Be blunt force
truth.
Yeah,
it would be shattered.
Which you say you love, but you really don't because you have a heart, and you don't want to tell Jonathan that he really needs to trim his beard a little bit.
Actually, you know what? It's funny. I was talking to Jonathan earlier today.
Jonathan's in the studio. Jonathan
Gillen. He's hanging out with us today. He's going to be on in a little bit. But, you know, this is a true story. Jonathan just asked me a question, a very personal question.
What was it?
About his appearance.
And did you? What did you say to
and
him?
And I gave him blunt force trauma truth.
And what did you say to him?
I said, yeah, right. Oh God. Okay, so we're gonna do a poll. We'll do it on Hannity.com. We'll take a picture and we'll post it since I'm going to talk about this anyway. But Jonathan has hair right now on his head, which he doesn't normally have. He normally is, you know, this bald, tough Navy SEAL.
Let me be more blunt, honest with you. Jonathan looks like crap today.
Okay.
I don't know what you've done to yourself today. I mean, you got this sweatshirt.
I woke up.
What time did you wake up today? You look like you rolled out of bed.
No, I mean, I'm writing another book, so I'm not sleeping. When I start writing, I don't
sleep. Well, Sheep No More's done so well, I'm not surprised. I mean, that book has killed it, and good for you.
Thank you.
Jonathan has a sweatshirt on, but it's one of these sweatshirts where, like, it's so open on the neck that it actually shows his full shoulders are
That's
exposed.
That's because he's
here.
A beast. He's got a thick neck because he's a Navy SEAL.
Okay, he doesn't ever trim his beard, which makes him look scary.
Okay, this is not the point of the story, first of all. You've hijacked the entire narrative. I need to reclaim my time and my story.
Reclaiming my time.
The point is that Jonathan asked me a question about his appearance, and I could tell that he wanted the answer to be, I love the way your hair looks, but I told him the truth. I said, I like you bald.
And Lauren said what she said she would do.
What?
She said she loved the hair.
I really do, though.
Lauren
it's not
is
a
never.
White lie.
Let me tell you something. Lauren is never, ever going to tell you the truth if she thinks
think
you look
about,
like crap.
Think about
ever.
The way you used to
it's
dress.
It's not in her.
And I told you how terrible you looked.
But you got to tell them the gist of how we broke the tie.
Well, you don't even like my golf shirts, so now I wear like those untucked shirts.
First of all, you had like three shirts in rotation for 5 days. Inappropriate. Let's start there.
All right, look, it's not inappropriate because it gets cleaned every day I go home.
You have purple and pink shirts in rotation.
Blair is also in the studio today, and Blair does a lot of our computer work. And Blair, we call him Sleepy Beauty because whenever you need him for an emergency to get something up on the website, he's never available.
See, now this is when we should go into definitions of exaggeration because that happened one time.
Sunshine, stop lying. That's another lie you just told.
No, it was one time.
Okay, are you going to call it a white lie? Because you and I both know it's not true. So when he's missing in action, I go, where the heck is Blair? And she goes, no, he's on.
See, that's a white lie because that's not what you said.
No, you said.
No, that's not the language you used at all.
True.
That's a big old white lie. Big white lie.
It's not
big,
a white lie because I'm within
huge.
FCC guidelines. But Blair was missing in action when we needed him. And you go to cover for him. Like, for example, I'll give you another example of your white lies.
This
you ready?
This is wonderful.
No, I'll give you another. So I will say when somebody messes up on the program, which doesn't really happen that often, I'll say, okay, who did it? Was it Lauren? Was it Sleeping Beauty? Was it Jason? Was it Ethan? And I'll ask you, and you won't tell me. I said, no.
No, that's not true. No.
And then you'll say, it's my fault.
Unlike Scott
when
Israel,
I take
responsibility for my team.
Okay, that's admirable. But then when I go in and I say, who did it? And you say to me, oh, it's all my fault. I did it. You're lying. And you're lying to protect
my crew.
Your crew over there. You know, as if they're going to get yelled at by me, which never happens.
It never happens.
That's correct.
They just get called out on air, Sleeping Beauty. That's not bad at all.
Listen, Blair's the greatest computer guy I ever met. But God help you if you need him in an emergency. He's sleeping. And God forbid if you call a cell phone, he's not picking up because the ringer's not on.
He needs to rest for all the work you're going to give him during the day.
Listen.
You know, that's a really critical element of the story that you're leaving out.
What's that?
What time did the action occur here of the day?
It was
when you needed us. What time was it?
Yeah, tell us.
I think 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, 10 o'clock? Really? Is that what time was? No, I think you're wrong.
You think I'm wrong?
I actually know you're wrong, but I'm just being nice.
What time is it? I don't remember.
It was 12:15 in the morning.
I remember I was on a plane. I remember that part.
That's good.
I remember I was on a plane. And, I will give... Ethan was out cold, too. He was gone. He was Sleeping Beauty number two. Lauren, she's just slowpoke. It took her 2 hours.
I rallied. I fell asleep, but I woke up.
All right, and then she's like, hello, do you need me? And I'm like, but you, up to your credit, you're always up.
I'm always up, and I'm always on duty.
No, you're not really.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
You just have insults for the whole team today.
No, I'm not insulting anybody. But
really? You're not insulting anybody? Wow.
I don't think I'm insulting anyone.
Is that a white lie?
I don't think I am. That's the truth. That's not an insult.
Just because you believe it.
Why can't we, writer today.
Wait a minute. Why can't we all just admit a simple truth that we all tell white lies?
I think you tell white lies.
I know you do, so stop.
You know nothing. I know what I know, and you know what you know.
When you say that, you're telling a full-on lie because you know you tell white lies.
You believe what you want to believe,
no,
and
it's just
what
the absolute truth that you tell white lies, and just stop acting as though you're above telling a white lie.
First of all, I am not
just
above anything.
Just be honest. Why do you have to lie about it?
Why do you have to lie about it?
I'm not lying about it.
Just because you say you believe it doesn't make it true.
Did you or did you not tell me privately the treat is never going to make it?
I plead the fifth.
I plead. Okay, my point. And then you came on air and you said, absolutely, I believe treat's going to make it.
In my heart
that was
hearts,
a white lie.
I think we need clarity on the issue. In my heart of hearts.
Yeah, watch her spin. By the way, this is like she's speaking like a Democrat. Yeah. This is like Bill Clinton. It all depends
all,
what
I'm
is.
Always on duty. Then I'm a Democrat. Now I'm a white liar. Is there anything else we need to check off the list today?
Well, if you remember, I gave you recently a test at 2:30 in the morning.
What was the test?
If you were up.
Oh, okay.
Remember, did I not do that?
Yeah, a test. What is it? But if you said urgent.
No, I didn't say urgent.
That's right. So wasn't urgent.
I said, are you up? Because you always say you never sleep.
Well, I don't.
So I was testing.
But there's a caveat to that.
What's up?
Because my little guy was in my arms and the light is very bright on the phone.
That's another lie you just told.
No, it's not.
Because if you were up, you would have texted me.
No, I couldn't because he was sleeping.
Listen,
face
to your
front.
Credit, I don't want to make it a big deal because to your credit.
Oh, this isn't a big deal at all. No,
you're
at all.
Available pretty much 24/7 and you're no Sleeping Beauty. Or Sleeping Beauty 2. I love how it's the two guys that are missing in action. Now, Jason, God love him, he just doesn't have anything to do with the computer side of everything except for running, you know, all the engineering side of it. So he's out of this.
I'm wondering.
I didn't try Jason, but I bet you Jason would have been up because he probably was still a Coyote
but
Ugly.
But he never answers his phone, so you can't text him.
If I wrote
he
him...
He doesn't answer his phone in the daytime.
No, he would write me back. He's always written me
He'll
back.
He'll tell you the truth. He's slow to text back, aren't you, Jay?
Jay.
Yeah, I'm a little slow, but I'd be
for me,
awake.
If,
I'm awake at 12.
If you saw my email, you'd immediately respond.
If it's you, yeah.
Yeah, yeah you'd respond to me. You would respond.
You would never.
Exactly. And I'd leave it. I try to leave everybody alone on weekends. I usually say to you what? Enjoy your weekend. Have fun.
Except
enjoy your
you,
family.
Linda. I'll be testing you at 2:35
a.m. I did that one time because you were saying, I never sleep before.
Well, I don't.
5
and I wasn't asleep.
Blah, blah, blah.
How many times has a sleep been had?
That's another never.
That's an amazing fact.
Well, that's Sleeping Beauty.
We should share that with our audience who's, you know,
Excuse
Sleeping
me.
Beauty. This sleeping
was,
all the time.
We ought to tell everybody the whole truth. This was when
Nothing
my
but.
Twitter account was, quote, compromised, a.k.a. hacked. And, like, I don't know how to fix this garbage. I'm like, okay, this is, you know, and, you know, this is
you
the funny
so
thing.
You are so subtle. It's just unreal.
I don't know. I have no idea how to fix this. I don't even tweet hardly
like a
anymore.
Mack truck in a
I
ballet.
I ask everybody to send the tweet for me because you all hate the way I tweet and you don't like it when I get in big fights with people. Everyone knows, stop. You know, why are you wasting your time on this nobody? I'm like, because I'm enjoying myself. But the problem is when I tweeted a real lot, it was like another job. And I don't have time for another job. I want to do this job well, which I apparently did not do in this particular half hour because I've been distracted by my team.
You're fired.
But the only point I'm making is, you know, when Chuck Todd is out there suggesting that, and this bothers me because every woman in the Trump administration, and I wrote you a long piece about this yesterday, every woman around Donald Trump, his daughter, his wife, Hope Hicks, anybody that has been in his, even his 11-year-old kid, is fair game to this corrupt media. Hope Hicks has been there from the beginning. I was there when it was Trump, Hope, and Corey Lewandowski. And that was the whole team for the most part. And they were the ones that traveled with him. They were the ones that were with him. And Keith, his bodyguard, was usually around for most of that time as well. And I saw how hard they worked. I know how many hours they put in, and in all honesty, it's comparable to what all of you do every day, and I applaud all of you, even Sleeping Beauty. Listen, the lesson is learned. Just you got to have a phone next to you that can wake you up. That's all I need. It'll happen once a year. I hope we don't get hacked 400 times a year, but there's been so many attempted hackings on us. I mean, it's ridiculous. And all of you are in charge of everything now, so it's, you know, you're responsible. It's not my deal anymore. Now, Stanginator, if I write him at 3 in the morning, he's going to be out cold, too. You notice it's the guys on this team, Sleeping Beauty Blair, Sleeping Beauty Ethan, and where are you going to be at 2 o'clock on a weekend night?
You have never reached me, and I have not gotten right back to you.
That's in how many years have we worked together?
26.
26 years together.
Yeah.
I think that's probably true, but on this occasion, it was really late at night, and I know you're older now, and you've got two kids.
That's true.
And you're back in the day, Stanger would be up at 7 o'clock in the morning from the night before.
You actually texted me one time at 6 a.m. on a Sunday, and I happened to be up because my kid was sick.
Well,
and you said I answered your question, and then you said, "What are you doing awake?" I'm like, "I have a sick kid."
Listen, everybody wonders why they get text emails at 3 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 6 in the morning for me. And I'm like, well, because I sleep in spurts. I get a little sleep, and then I get up, I work, and then I do a little sleep and get up and work. And I don't know. Why am I even talking about this? All right. We're going to get focused here when we get back. Michelle Malkin is going to be with us. 800-941-SHAWN. But the bottom line is everybody tells white lies. And if they say they're not, don't tell white lies, they're actually full on lying. That's my contention. All right.
Not going to disclose the video at this time. And we may never disclose the video, depending on the prosecution and the criminal case. But what I saw was a deputy arrive at the west side of Building 12, take up a position, and he never went in.
I didn't even release it
you
right
You didn't
that
look at
second.
The video? It was 1 week after the shooting. You hadn't looked at the video yet?
I looked at the video as soon as our investigators, it wasn't my job to look at the video.
Seeing red flag after red flag after red flag, warning after warning after warning, they hear that your office didn't even initiate a report when they got a call saying that this guy could be a school shooter in the making. How could there not even be a report on this one?
Well, if that's accurate, Jake, there needed to be a report, and that's what we're looking into, that a report needed to be completed. It needed to be forwarded to our either Homeland Security or Violent Crimes Unit, and they would have followed up on it.
That's from your notes. That's from notes released by your office. I'm not making this up. This is from Broward.
No, and that's what that the officer who handled that is on restrictive duty, and that's an active internal investigation, and we are looking into it. I can't tell you, I can't predict how an investigation's going, but I've exercised my due diligence. I've led this county proudly, as I always have. We have restricted that deputy as we look into it. You know, their deputies make mistakes, police officers make mistakes, we all make mistakes. But it's not the responsibility of the general or the president if you have a deserter. You look into this, we're looking into this aggressively, and we'll take care of it, and justice will be served.
All right, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the program. That, of course, is Scott Israel. And, you know, some of the more amazing things this guy keeps going out there, I'm not responsible for what my deputies do, and I didn't bother looking at the tape, but I've done an amazing job if you just look at me. And, you know, it's not my fault when deputies fail. I'm like, I've given amazing leadership. I'd have been the first person in. Well, now we're discovering that, in fact, it was all about protocol that was being filed, because it never made sense that, in fact, Coral Springs police officers went in. And meanwhile, Broward sheriffs, the one guy that was actually working, he had a vest on and he had a concealed carry and he was there and he stayed outside. And then the EMTs were told to stay outside, and three other Broward County deputies, they didn't go inside. It's just you can't fathom this. Now they don't even want to release the tape, according to the sheriff. Anyway, joining us now is Michelle Malkin. Always glad to have her. She hosts, of course, the award-winning TV series on CRTV. And apparently the Hollywood International Independent Film Awards announced that one of your episodes about the fishing wars and about commercial fishing industry won a top award. I am shocked, because usually, you know, we don't win awards, especially with anything to do with Hollywood.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Right. They made a big mistake. What, did they not know who it was?
They definitely didn't get the message. But, yeah, we're thrilled about it. And you would love this story, too, because these are the forgotten men and women that you have devoted so much of your attention and energy to. These guys love you. I was out in Stonington, Connecticut, and Providence, Rhode Island, and these are third and fourth generation family fisher people who are suffering under the boot of big government trying to get their story out. So we're just excited that we can help them do that.
You know, you've been a strong advocate. You're watching as I'm watching everything that's going on as it relates to this particular, you know, sheriff. And I'm thinking that this is not the police that I know. This isn't the FBI I know, missing two huge, you know, basically take out a billboard. I want to be a professional school shooter. Oh, and by the way, phone call tip, he's going to blow up a school and shoot up a school. And they didn't do anything. And 39 times they've been to this kid's house, but they don't report it every time. Oh, why? Because it might impact the finances that they get in the school district.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, these aren't just red flags. As you're suggesting, these were neon Broadway-sized signs that were ignored deliberately. I mean, this is by design and not by accident. And in large part, it's because of the Chicago crony educrats that have infested so many of these school districts. Robert Runcie, who is the school superintendent who worked with Sheriff Israel on these restorative justice policies that intended to erase any kind of law enforcement records simply because there were racial disparities that they couldn't accept. And so they didn't want to record that a disproportionate number of black students and Latino students were being referred, so they didn't refer anybody. It's that bureaucratic agenda of no records, no problem. Well, what did it lead to? The deaths of 17 innocent teachers and students, a river of blood, and all of these unanswered questions. And, you know, you played the clip there of Jake Tapper, and in large part I blame him and his feckless network for jumping to conclusions about what happened there. Imagine if they had done all of this shoe leather reporting before they decided to make a big public Democrat talking points gun grabbing convention out of it. I think that they're now trying to overcompensate, and I've mentioned this lawsuit that they and two other media outlets are part of now to dislodge the surveillance videos that are being held under our lock and key. And those surveillance videos could be released tomorrow. I think it's a farce.
Well, why do we have surveillance video? Well, what's the point? Listen, first of all, it should go to law enforcement. But when the sheriff says we may never release it, excuse me, those are our surveillance videos. We paid for them. It's just like, you know, dash cam videos. It just should be a matter of course. Release it.
Now, that's right.
If you have to hold it back for legal purposes in the interim, okay, say as soon as we can legally do so, we will do it. But
well, now it'll go before a district judge who will review the videos in camera. And to the extent that anything needs to be redacted because of confidentiality concerns or ongoing criminal investigation, then the judge should do that, but release those portions that are subject to the Open Records Act. And here you see the collusion between the school district and the sheriff's department. They said that they confiscated the videos as part of their investigation, and then the school district says, oh, well, it's out of our hands because we gave it over. Well, they should have maintained a copy as a requirement of the Open Records Act, and then they could have had the option to release it. But they're trying to hide behind the sheriff's skirts and cover their own tracks, too.
All right, let me move on because I want to get your thoughts on the FISA abuses, the battle between the president and the attorney general, Jeff Sessions. If the attorney general was going to, in fact, recuse himself the minute he got into office, why did he accept that job, number one? Number two, now that we, in fact, know, and I'm interested in the IG report, I hope it comes out sooner rather than later. I think we should get a lot of information, and I will say that Horowitz seems to be going a lot further than the attorney general's office, unless the DOJ are doing things that we don't know about, but it's taken an awfully long time, and it makes me think that things are not being done. But I just want to, I think this is a simple, basic, fundamental case. If you're lying to FISA court judges for the purpose of getting a warrant on not only an American citizen, but an opposition party candidate in a presidential election year, and you don't tell the judges, well, the first time, the initial application and three subsequent applications or renewals, if you don't tell the judge that the opposition party candidate paid for it, and you don't tell the judge that it wasn't verified, and you actually go out of your way to create the sense that there was, you know, two separate sources corroborating a story, but it's really one source. You know, that seems to me that something is really amiss, because that would be shredding the Constitution and shredding our Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable search and seizure.
Absolutely. I mean, we are in a grave crisis here, and so many of these agencies' credibility have been completely shot. Let me say this. I followed a lot of Inspector General Michael Horowitz's work under the Obama administration, and he is no Obama lackey. This is somebody who publicly challenged Obama stonewalling on Fast and Furious and the IRS investigation, who called out the Obama's evasion of cooperation with the independent inspector general for, you know, almost the entire 8 years that Obama was in office. And I have been a champion of the inspectors general in Washington for the last two decades under both the Bush and Obama administrations. I have no doubt that when that report comes out, that it will be serious, that it will be comprehensive, and that we will know that all of these months that we've been laboring to find out whether anything was happening, that in fact that this investigation has been ongoing. And I think that some people may be misinterpreting Sessions' answer yesterday, that people seem to think meant that they were only getting started on an investigation into these FISA abuses now. I think if we read between the lines, and especially if we look at all of the information that has been disclosed to date, I think that the investigation not only has been ongoing, but it has been wide in its scope.
Explain to me your thoughts on how the media, without evidence, has been able to keep a narrative alive for a year. And if there is evidence of Trump-Russia collusion, now you get we're now getting a leak a day from the special counsel's office. They're willing accomplices in the media every single day to leak something that is either old or something they've not been able to corroborate, to create the impression that any second now that Donald Trump is going to be, you know, accused of colluding with Vladimir Putin, that he knew about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and knew that was all coming out and colluded to release that information. And there's no evidence of any of it, but the media breathlessly, hysterically, has now been reporting it for almost 20 months.
Yes, and that is the stubborn power of the Beltway press echo chamber and the muscle that the Fourth Estate has wielded almost without challenge for so long. But I think the good news is that they're not nearly as powerful as they think they are. And I think the success of your show, not just the ratings, but your ability to get the real truth out, and by extension, the manifestation of people's hunger to get the truth out, should give us cause for not celebration, but at least relief. And, you know, for all of these years, you've always told people, let not your heart be troubled. And I feel that as much turmoil as the news media, the news trolls, who are worse than any Russian trolls out there in sowing the seeds of division in this country, are not going to succeed.
Well, look at what the New York Times is doing. If you read the New York Times on Jared Kushner today, you would expect that Jared, and the irony of all ironies, Ken Starr said this is such an overreach by Robert Mueller, and he's right.
Yes.
But you would think that this was the issue. Nothing to do with Russia at all, but everything to create every possible impression of quid pro quo financial dealings with Jared Kushner. That you would think he's guilty. And it seems in this environment that even a mere mention by any news media, regardless of their media bias, that it's guilt the minute they just say it might have happened.
Right. And that is the manufacturing of all of these squirrels, I call them, distraction squirrels. These news hounds create these squirrels to try and distract the public from the basic fact that their thesis from day one of the Trump administration and even before that has been completely sabotaged. There is no truth to it, and they'll keep repeating it over and over again, and they'll keep digging and digging, and they'll keep digging in their heels. And I have to say, I think this is the concern about probably among a lot of people about why they don't want to appoint a second special counsel. Because if you are going to give them all those prosecutorial powers, we're going to end up with Mueller 2.0.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Attorney General and the President. They're back and forth yesterday. Michelle Malkin, award-winning show on CRTV now. Congratulations again. Quick break. Hey, one of the best things about refinancing your student loans at trisofi.com when you go to the website is, of course, all the money you're going to save. On average, over $22,000 over the course of your loan. And that means, okay, go buy a new car or put the money down for a down payment for a house. Now, refinancing with TrySofi.com, it'll lower your student loan interest rate. And that's only the beginning, because TrySofi.com has an entire suite of financial services and products all designed to help save you money. Not only student loans, but personal loans, financial advice, investment. They've got it all, and they have exclusive benefits you won't get elsewhere. With the TrySofi.com community, everything from career counseling, social networking events, unemployment protection. Now, TrySofi.com, they reward your good credit, your income. They offer the lowest rates possible, and the whole application can be done online in just a few steps. This entire process will take you just minutes, and think of all the money you can save and put in your pocket. Just write this down, TrySofi.com. Go there now, TrySofi.com. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. More with Michelle Malkin on the other side.
Sean Hannity.
All right, as we continue, Michelle Malkin, award-winning host, CRTV. So you have a back and forth with Jeff Sessions yesterday, and I just want to get your take on it.
I don't like to see fighting within the family, certainly. It's almost like, Mom, Dad, stop fighting. There are a lot of people who have the hope that this is part of the 4D chess game, that what they're doing is sort of luring the left into siding with Sessions and Horowitz, and then, you know, when the results of that Inspector General's report come out, they'll be, you know, boxed in. I hope so. But what we do have here, I don't think is necessarily the obvious read on it from the mainstream media that's taking glee in it is that this is an adversarial and hostile relationship. But, you know, I go back and look at how Jeff Sessions was one of the earliest backers of Donald Trump, you know, faced the wrath of so many of the establishment Republican senators. And if the contrast is here between, the relationship between Trump and the Attorney General versus the lackey that Eric Holder was, doing everything to pervert the Department of Justice and make it a tool of a left-wing president who had no respect for the Constitution, maybe yep. That's what we're going for here.
All right, Michelle Malkin, love having you as always. Thanks for being with us, and congratulations again on the award for your show, CRTV. 25 now till the top of the hour. In a second, we're going to be joined here by Luke Rosiak, investigative reporter for the Daily Caller. We're going to talk a lot about his news story about the FBI, the DOJ, their actions in the House hacking case, which are even more indefensible than in the other cases that we know about, and you know how the inexplicable lack of charges tells us everything you need to know about how the deep state really is and the power they have. Now, if you watched and have you been following those of you on the what we do on this show, well, you know that Luke Rosiak we've been covering this now for a year with him as he's been breaking this news. You got a well-respected IG saying that based on the indisputable server logs, the Pakistanis, remember, hacked Congress's data. And there were numerous other frightening red flags, and prosecutors never charged them without the FBI even looking into it enough to disprove it. And the FBI put a first-year agent on the case who followed a suspect to the airport, found an illegal amount of cash on her, let her board the flight anyway, and filed papers saying, well, she's gone for good. And then 6 months later, no one can explain how the lack of hacking charges can be justified given the amount of facts. But we'll hear more about Trump and Russia. Don't worry about that. And remember, this includes the Imran Awan, and he stole the server containing the evidence after they were caught. and the DOJ never even charged things that the FBI actually brought to them. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz has fought to keep prosecutors from bringing charges, and her brother, remember, works as an assistant U.S. attorney in the same office that's actually handling the case. Now, one of the co-defendants said that she's being controlled by Imran Awan. Via death threats. And prosecutors never mentioned the fact that she's obviously under duress, nor trying to flip her. And Jeff Sessions, why isn't he acted here? And there's irrefutable evidence in this case, and it's harming national security. Let's go back in our archives and listen to Debbie Wasserman Schultz threatening that Capitol Police officer, because remember, he had the laptop. And then Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you know, regarding her guy, Imran Awan, saying, well, he did the right thing. Okay, he was overcharging, and people that had no IT skills were being paid massive amounts of money. And then she talks about, you know, the staffer says that she fired him after he was arrested. And she says she kept Imran Awan around because of concerns that he was being ethnically and racially profiled. Let's play those.
Under my understanding, the Capitol Police is not able to confiscate members' equipment when the member is not under investigation. It is their equipment, and it's supposed to be returned.
Well, I think there's extenuating circumstances in this case, and I think that, you know, working through my counsel and, you know, the necessary personnel, if that in fact is the case, and with the permission of through the investigation, then we'll return the equipment. But until that's accomplished, I can't return the equipment.
I think you're violating the rules when you conduct your business that way, and should expect that there would be consequences.
Not only I believe that I did the right thing, and I would do it again, because as I said at the beginning of this conversation, there are times when you can't be afraid to stand alone, and you have to stand up for what's right. And, you know, even in the face, there are times you have to spend political capital to do what's right. Like I said, the easier thing to do for me would have been to just fire him. Obviously, I was the person who's had the most political challenges in the last year, so it would have been much easier for me to just cut him loose and say, you know, I'm going to look out for my best interests rather than stand up for what I believe in. But I have to be able to look at myself in the mirror every day. And I'm, if there's one thing I'm going to make sure that I maintain is my integrity.
Well, he's not my staffer. He no longer works for me, and when he was arrested, I terminated him. I kept him on the payroll during the time that he was not arrested and not charged with anything, and that was because, as I said, that I was concerned about the violation of his due process rights, and also that there were racial and ethnic profiling concerns as well. I have maintained that it was important and will continue to maintain that when someone's due process rights are potentially being violated, that I'm going to stand up and make sure that people's rights are protected in this country. That's the oath that I swore to uphold when I swore to uphold the Constitution. And when he was arrested and due process was established, then I terminated him.
All right, joining us now, investigative reporter Luke Rosiak is with us. You know, you've done an amazing amount of work in the last year, and it's beyond shocking that there's no indictment, seemingly no movement, and we keep literally spinning our wheels on the same topics every day. And despite all the evidence that we bring forward, well, absolutely nobody moves. And I don't understand it. Now you got the president and Jeff Sessions attacking each other because they're both sick and tired of each other.
Yeah, exactly, Sean. It's surreal to be talking about this with you today because it's been exactly almost to the day, a year, since we've been talking about Imran Awan. And what we've learned in the months since then about the FBI and the DOJ in general, we've seen how time and again they've had evidence, things about things like Hillary Clinton sending classified information on private servers. They have the evidence and they don't bring any charges. And that's been the pattern that's been so clearly emerging But I think this case is the most damning of all of them, and I think that Jeff Sessions is going to have to answer a lot of questions if they don't wind up bringing charges. These guys are going to be in court next week on Thursday, and right now they're still, they've just charged them with minor things involving wiring hundreds of thousands of dollars over to Pakistan, and they acknowledge in court papers that they say they were doing that to escape the underlying investigation. They knew we were already on to them for the House stuff, and they were trying to flee. Okay, well, where are the charges for the House stuff? Because they have the investigation from the IG. And so in these other failings of the FBI, and there's so many of them, there's the political failings is probably the wrong word, because when you see them not bringing charges against Democrats, it kind of seems like it's not necessarily like it might be intentional. But then you also have the bungled things like when the school shootings and they don't follow up on the tips. But with this is like the House Inspector General spent 6 months, a team of government cybersecurity experts built this case on these guys, and it indicated strong suspicion that these guys could be foreign spies. They could be blackmailing members with their data. They could be selling info. The investigation uses words like insider threat and nefarious. And this is happening at the same time that we're constantly hearing from Democrats and others about cybersecurity is the biggest threat. We're being hacked, foreign meddling. This was totally consistent with all those things. And they give it to the FBI, and they literally put a first-year agent on the case. I mean, just one guy, and he's just kind of rooting around. I mean, I think if Imran Awan would have pulled out a joint and smoked some marijuana, Jeff Sessions would have sicked more agents on him than they did in this case.
Let's go over, if we can, all the evidence that and all the stories that you've now broken in a year, because, you know, we've been so busy, obviously focused on FISA abuses, Hillary's email, Uranium One, the special counsel, the double standard, no equal justice under the law, dual application of laws, that this actually goes by the wayside, and it's a massive scandal, and we have all the evidence. I just want you to bring everybody up to speed.
Well, what the IG found is that they're, you know, impersonating members of Congress. They're moving data off the House network. And my reporting found that they were operating these side businesses, one of which took $100,000 from this fugitive tied to Hezbollah. They're moving huge amounts of money around. Their family members say that they would sell their own family for a penny. They'd do anything for money. So people really think that they were blackmailing members or selling this data. And really, you know, there's so much there. But what I want to focus on today is the way that the DOJ and the FBI responded to this. I mean, they followed them to the airport. They let her leave. And, you know, this information that I've reported, I've done 50 stories on these guys.
Let me go back, though, a little bit further so we can give a little more background for our audience, because, listen, I'm following all of this every day, and I forget details. And, you know, you've done such a good job exposing this case. But remember, so Imran Awan actually is the IT guy for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and a number of other Democrats. And let's pick it up from there and literally end it at the point where he, not only the airport where they let this woman get away, but also when he leaves a note for law enforcement with Debbie Wasserman Schultz's laptop. Explain.
Right. So the IG finds that he's doing all this really bad stuff on the House network, and they ban him from the computers. But he comes into the office anyway after he's been banned, and he takes Debbie Wasserman Schultz's computer and leaves it in a phone booth at midnight after he's been banned from
touching the House network. We have people. He's double billing. He's hiring family members, if I recall correctly. One worked at a fast food place. Another worked at something involving the sale of automobiles. And if they really had the IT experience that they're getting paid a lot of money for, I mean, the equivalent in some cases of what the chief of staff of any congressman or woman would get, which is a lot of money in Washington. And literally, they don't have the qualifications, and they were caught double billing, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz kept him on, and he still had access to the computers. And there, we believe that there was top secret, and special access program classified information on these computers, don't we?
I don't know about classified information, but it's stuff that members of Congress, you can blackmail them with, you can sell it to ISI, things like that, intel to Pakistani intelligence. So there's a couple different things going on here. It seemed like they're probably ghost employees, and they're getting paid $7 million over the last, they got the whole family on the payroll. Like you said, one of them is actually working at McDonald's. They're no-show employees by a lot of different pieces of evidence. And so there's the component of that kind of fraud, and then equipment is going missing. But really the most concerning one is the data stuff. And, you know, some of the investigators are like, honestly, when we saw the data stuff, I mean, honestly, it doesn't even matter if they stole $10 million. This is frightening stuff. But what we didn't see is a commensurate response from law enforcement. And so months go by, and they're just kind of nibbling around the edges. I go down to court, and I find out that they're suing their own family, their family's suing them. They're in court constantly being accused of fraud by different people, suing other people. I find that this guy has two different wives under Islamic law in Virginia, and both of them called the police on him, and they were found bloodied. One of them said she was being kept like a slave. And this is stuff that's going on in suburban Virginia by some of the highest paid staffers in the house. And so looking at these court papers involving this woman who says she's being kept as a slave, I find that he's using a secret email address, 123@mail.house.gov. I trace that back to Andre Carson.
Why isn't this guy in jail?
That's the question here, and I don't think we have time to go through. Talk more about this.
Isn't it likely Debbie Wasserman Schultz is complicit in this?
Yes. The reason, so this has occurred, the lack of proper response under the DOJ has occurred primarily this year under Jeff Sessions. And the reason that they haven't done anything is because Debbie Wasserman Schultz has used her power to pressure them. So here you have Jeff Sessions. He doesn't want to, when you know, Trump is encouraging him to do things, he says, oh, that would be inappropriate for me to respond. But when the Democrats are pressuring the DOJ, Wasserman Schultz is still manipulating the DOJ on this. And that is why they haven't charged him, despite the evidence that they have. Is that,
right. Stay right there. We're going to come back. Investigative reporter with the Daily Caller, Luke Rosiak, is with us. Hey, if you believe in the Second Amendment like I do, and you're a responsible gun owner like I am, and you need to be responsible. Look, if you're looking for the perfect handgun for self-defense these days, the day and age of home invasion, the day and age where, you know, people are literally shot in their cars. All right, as we continue, investigative reporter Luke Rosiak is with the Daily Caller, and we're talking about his brand new column out today. So let me go to the headline of your story. You know, why did the FBI, well, in this particular case, in the DOJ, why are they acting the way they're acting?
So the DNC and the Democrats still seem to have this hold on the FBI, and they've manipulated them so much. I mean, let's go back to the election. You've got Wasserman Schultz in charge of the DNC, and you've got her manipulating the FBI into starting this investigation into Trump by feeding the FBI this dossier that the DNC has paid for. At the same time, the DNC is hacked, their emails are released, and they start saying, well, foreign meddling and hacking, these are the worst things in the world, the sky is falling, but the FBI can't see the server of the DNC. So what people didn't really know until recently is around the same time, the IG of the House came out with this report indicating that Wasserman Schultz's own Pakistani-born IT guy seemed to have done just that. There was numerous indications that he was doing hacking and potentially foreign meddling, potentially having connections to foreign governments. And so Wasserman Schultz, instead of saying, well, geez, we got to treat this just as seriously as we have with all the other cyber breaches, she starts meddling with the DOJ again, this time in the opposite direction, making sure they don't pursue it. So we heard that audio clip where she's threatening the police chief with consequences.
Yeah, you apprehend the woman at the airport. You let her get out. She's suspected of hacking Congress. Awan and his family members, you know, logging into servers of congressmen and women, people they don't work with. Unbelievable. And where does it go and who's paying them? All right. Great work. I got to tell you, Luke Rosiak will stay on it. We seem eventually, hopefully one day the Department of Justice, FBI gets their act together. This is the most corrupt I've ever seen it. All right. When we come back, Jonathan Gillum, Danielle McLaughlin, all the other news of the day that we haven't had time to get to. And your call straight ahead, 800-941-SEAN, our toll-free telephone number.
One of the things that we've heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, I can hope you can shed some light on it, is that there might have been a stand-down order. Somebody on the radio telling Broward deputies not to enter the school until a SWAT team arrived. What can you tell us about that?
I can't tell you anything about that. I haven't heard that. As I said, we feverishly are dissecting. It's a voluminous investigation. There was, while the killer was on campus with this horrific killing, there was one deputy, one armed person within the proximity of that school, and that was Peterson. Everything else is fluid, and as I said, we will get to the truth. But right now, people could have conjecture, people could act on rumors, and people have, you know, everybody has the right to their own opinion, but nobody has the right to their own set of facts.
Yeah, nobody has their right to their own set of facts. Now we know there was a stand-down order, which makes sense. What have I been saying? I never in my entire life ever heard of a police officer that was armed and had a vest on that would take a position outside and not go in. And then on top of that, it made no sense that three other cops didn't go in as well. But the Coral Springs, which is the local community, those cops came and raced in. And then the Broward County Sheriff, then what they're telling the EMTs, they can't go in. And people, literally seconds matter when you're bleeding out after a shooting and you can save lives. It never made sense. I've never known any police officer that would ever act that way, never mind four. But it appears it was protocol. It appears that that's what they were told to do. And on top of every other ridiculous thing that Sheriff Scott Israel has said, oh, I may never release the video of the school shooting. No, you got to release the video. Let's see what happened. Let's see what, so we can prevent it from ever happening again. And, you know, he doesn't look at the video for over a week, say, oh, that's not my job. Oh, it's not my fault when my deputies fail. And, you know, I've given amazing leadership as the Broward County Sheriff, but I would have been the first person in. Unbelievable. Anyway, news roundup, information overload. Glad you're with us. 800-941-SEAN, Jonathan Gillum, Danielle McLaughlin are here with us. Jonathan, it never made sense. It never made sense. And I'm thinking, all right, maybe one cop just wasn't part of the 99.9%.
Right.
But four, no way. There was no way in hell four cops would stay outside when they know there's an active shooter of students inside. No way.
Right. You know, in the my book, Sheep No More, The Art of Awareness and Attack Survival, you wrote the foreword to it. I put in there some history, past history of failures, and I included in there Columbine, which is the attack by Klebold and Harris, two students who did not use AR-15s, and all the mistakes that they made that were repeated in Orlando that many years later. Columbine set something in motion called active shooter response, and all law enforcement is trained in that. But something's going on down in Florida. When you look at the response of what happened in San Bernardino with the terrorists, that was effective response, timely and effective. But what happened in Orlando and now what happened here with this sheriff, I have to think, because in both of these locations, the politics are so leftist.
Well, did you see that? No, look, when the Coral Springs police captain or sheriff, I'm not sure who it was. I don't know.
It's a police department. That's a police department.
Okay. When they came out with their statement that our guys went in, we want the community to know we got there and we did our job and we were the first in.
And that's not an elected official.
No.
See, there's the difference.
That's a police department.
There's the difference.
Okay. Now, here's a simple question, Danielle. You're in any municipal building, God forbid, there's an active shooter. Would you feel better if you knew that there were trained, retired police officers, trained, retired military that had concealed carry and that were on the premises there as it's going on, especially knowing that the average shooting in a case like this is over in under 3 minutes?
Hi, good afternoon, Sean. Hi, Jonathan. Great to be with you again. Look, I actually do agree. I think that we have people on aircraft to defend us in case of problematic.
So you want the retired armed military, retired armed police on site if, God forbid, you're in a building with an active shooter?
I think we need to look at this not only in a municipal building.
I'm not asking if we should look at it. I'm asking if you're, God forbid, ever in a municipal building and there's an active shooter, would you rather have armed, trained, retired military police officers right there on site as it's happening?
Absolutely. 100% of the time.
Okay, that was the simple question. Now you can go on with your other statement.
No, and all I meant was to say that I actually think that we do need to look at hardening these schools. I love Jonathan's approach, which is looking at these schools from the attacker's approach. And I know, obviously, that's a lot of what your book deals with, Jonathan. I have grave concerns about putting teachers in the line of fire by arming them. That's a whole other conversation, which I'm not in support of. But we have people who are trained, even police officers, when they are faced with gunfire, the numbers aren't great in terms of being shot or being injured. The FBI did it in a survey between 2000 and 2013. It's not without its risks, but we need to do something about this gun violence epidemic, and I think it needs to be multifaceted, but I'm not in disagreement that that shouldn't be something that
about the gun debate, which is, as I've been arguing from the beginning, is this happens, it's predictable. Although President Trump is trying to find a middle ground. I don't agree with every one of his proposals, but he's obviously trying to find a middle ground. But here's my point to you. So the idea that we would do a full security threat assessment of every school in America and that we would control the perimeter in terms of entry points, at least, you know, maybe it's two or three people outside walking around the outside of the school, that we'd have an ID system that nobody gets in the school unless you have a proper ID. You go through a metal detector. Every school floor has concealed carry, retired military police. Would that be a good idea to prevent and help in case of something happening? Wouldn't that go a long way to stopping this, Danielle?
I think it has to be a part of the solution, but here's my concern. If we do this for schools, this is a very reactive response.
98%, wait a minute, 98% since 1950. Of shooting incidents occur in no gun zones.
Right, but what happens in movie theaters? What happens in malls? What happens not only schools? Are we going to overly militarize our community so that everywhere you go is you feel like you're in prison? Like, there has to be a way of dealing with this without turning us into our own, like, prisoners of our own security.
But that's the argument, one thing I do want to say is I'm finding that more and more liberals are coming on board with the reality that we have to secure stuff rather than just start messing with the Constitution. But here's one thing that I want Danielle and all the other liberals to understand is that, and not just liberals, but anybody out there, that we're not militarizing. See, that's, you don't look at the airport as being militarized. You look at the airport as being heavily secured. Even that needs to be rethought somewhat. But if we had the schools where we had a controlled perimeter, you're not going to be walking on there saying, this is like walking, you know, being a part of the military. That's not what you're going to say. I mean, when you go to a federal building, you work in courthouses. You don't feel like it's militarized. You feel like it's controlled. And that's the thing that we need to do, is set up these systems to control who comes in and who comes and who's around the facility so that we can stop an attacker before they ever get in. And that's not what's being talked about. I got to say, from my point of view of what the president's talking about, for the first time, I think in his short career so far, he's now a politician. He's now looking at things from a political standpoint, and that is going to be the downfall of this, is that he's not talking about security. He's talking about...
Well, his first point yesterday was about security. His very first point.
It's been over two weeks.
And it's also, the second point was about mental health.
Right.
And then he talked about getting everybody together in one bill.
But the priorities have been shifted.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, I think that the president is trying to be reactive. And one of the hallmarks one of the things that I think he wants to do differently is that he wants to get things done. And that means concessions that I would not give into.
Yeah.
But I do believe that people that are mentally unfit should have no access to a gun.
I agree.
And in this case, we missed every sign and symptom. All right, let me move on to another topic here. So there's a feud with the Trump administration and California. It's like all-out warfare now over the issue of immigration. Of course, we know it's a sanctuary state. And we also know that we have an Oakland mayor that actually went out and warned illegal immigrants of looming sweeps out there, leading Homeland Security's deportation chief to accuse her of endangering her city and his officers. So they're actually, you have an Oakland mayor aiding and abetting what is the law. whether you like the law, don't like the law, he's tipping off and literally acting as an accomplice in law breaking. And by tipping people off, doesn't that create a danger for law enforcement?
Danielle? Yeah. I'll let you take this one first.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. You know what? I actually don't think that somebody in political office should be doing this. There are plenty of immigration groups, public interest groups, people who help people who are trying to find a path here. And there is plenty of warnings that go out across communities. Believe me, it happens. I know about this. I actually don't think that the mayor should be getting involved in this particular thing. But I do think that sanctuary cities have a purpose. They have power and authority over their own laws. And what they're doing actually is an example of federalism, which tends to be something that Republicans really get behind, which is states get to do what they want to do unless there's a power, you know, articulated in the Constitution that the federal government has. And so I'll be very honest with you. Normally, liberals don't like federalism. They want more power in the federal government. But right here, what ICE is doing is trying to get states to do things that they are not legally required to do, and that's why we have this tension between the federal government on one side and the cities and states on the other.
All right, take a break. We'll come back. Jonathan got off the hook. He dodged and ducked like I've never seen him dodge and
duck.
Well,
I think they should just be prosecuted. That's what I think.
If you look at the facts that are already in the public domain, they're pretty damning. Starting with what we know about George Papadopoulos, one of the few foreign policy advisors to the campaign. We now know that Papadopoulos was approached by the Russians and told back in April of the election year, even before the Clinton campaign knew, that the Russians had stolen Clinton and DNC emails. And we also know that they previewed their dissemination, the anonymous dissemination of those emails with Papadopoulos back in April. Now, it was only weeks later that the Russians made a second approach to the Trump campaign, this time at the highest levels at Trump Tower, in a meeting that they previewed by saying that they wanted to offer incriminating information about Hillary.
Is it enough for Mueller to bring charges? Because if it isn't enough for Mueller to bring charges, what does that mean?
Well, what it means...
Charges of collusion.
This is a very important question, and that is, what's Mueller's job and what's our job? Mm-hmm. Bob Mueller will make the decision whether there is proof beyond reasonable doubt to indict and convict people. It is not his responsibility to tell the country what happened. And indeed, there's no guarantee that the country will ever learn what Bob Mueller finds apart from an indictment. Mm-hmm. It's the job of the Congress to tell the American people what happened. Whether it reaches the standard beyond reasonable doubt, or we merely find clear and convincing evidence of collusion. So it's important, I think, that we set out the facts for the public, set out the facts about what the Russians told Papadopoulos, about what the Russians did in setting up that meeting in Trump Tower. Now, bear in mind that meeting in Trump Tower, which takes place after the campaign is alerted that the Russians have these emails.
All right, let me move on. All right, so that's Adam Schiff. Papadopoulos was approached by Russians and told the Russians stole the DNC emails. I'm not believing his four-way hearsay. And then, of course, Schiff, Don Jr. meeting with the Russians at Trump Tower looks like collusion to me. How about paying for a Russian dossier full of Russian government lies? That looks like collusion to me. Jonathan Gillum, are you going to punt this one, or are you going to stick with Danielle McLaughlin and take it on first?
No, listen, anytime I can talk bad about Adam Schiff, I'll talk about him, because I have never – he is the quintessential corrupt politician, this guy. I mean, nothing that he says is fact-based. It's all ideological left-based. And when he – I don't even know why he's on that committee, because he doesn't do anything but obstruct real things from being done. And it's caused a huge problem in trying to identify how corrupt Mueller and this investigation actually is, because he's constantly egging the rest of the people that are trying to do what's right in this committee. He's constantly getting in the way of that. And I have a real problem. That's not what we hire politicians to do. We hire them to go up there and manage the country. And in this case, he, just like the mayor that we were talking about from Oakland before we went to break, you know, he's obstructing justice.
All right, Danielle, how do you argue with that?
Look, I think the problem here is Devin Nunes. I think that all of the nonsense with the Republican majority report coming out 10 days before the Democrats could get a rebuttal out there is really problematic, especially at a time where social media, you know, 10 days is a lifetime in terms of trying to rebut some of the claims that were made. That memo was full of omissions. And as you all know, when you swear to tell the truth, you tell the whole truth. And a lie can be a lie of omission. The Democratic memo, I think, was very clear on its use of the dossier and the extent to which there were many other things that corroborated some of the information in the dossier to support the FISA warrant. So I don't actually have any
excuse me. If you look at the Grassley Graham memo, the bulk of the application was the phony Clinton bought and paid for dossier that they never told the FISA judge about. But I got to leave it there. Thank you both. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Your calls are next. An amazing Hannity. I'll tell you about it straight ahead, 9 Eastern tonight.
Information download. Sean Hannity and the breaking news you might have missed today. It's Sean's insider information. Hannity is on right now.
This is Jason with Sean Hannity's show. Sean challenged me to see if I could do at least 10 reps of 230 pounds bench pressing. So I believe he said I would get $500 for doing that. So I'm aiming to collect my money. So let's do this. First off, let me show you that the weight is indeed 230 pounds right there. The weight is 115 pounds on each side. So I will do at least 10 reps, and I think just to show off, I'll do at least 15, maybe 20. So that's it, 21 reps of 230 pounds. I should get a good grand for that effort. And I'll take my money in small bills. Thank you very much.
I'm counting 420, 40, 60, 85. Jason, can you walk in the studio? And Ethan, you take over. You take over the board. And I will show this on the air. Now, the entire video, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe that he'd be able to do 230, 10 reps. But you know what? I'm proud of him. All right, now wait a minute. Hang on 1 second, because this is important. All right, 20. Watch, he says small bills. 40, 60, 81, 20, 40, 60, 82, 20, 40, 60, 83, 20, 40, 60, 84, 20, 40, 60, 85. Oh, I almost gave you an extra one. There you go. But you didn't. Here, take the extra one. There, you got to. By the way, that was pretty awesome. I'm actually very proud of you. And because you haven't been working out a lot, so I figured you might be getting soft on us. That's pretty awesome. We're proud of you. No, you got to talk into a microphone. It's radio, for crying out loud. Yes.
I hate to become doughy like you've become the last few years.
Oh, really? Does this look doughy? Thanks a lot. I don't feel doughy. There you go.
Well, you're not doughy anymore. You just gave all your dough away.
Yeah, I gave all my dough away. I'm proud. I'm really proud
of
him.
Your empty pockets, Hannity.
You know, everybody thinks that if I challenge somebody. Like, for example, I don't think you could do 25 push-ups on a tape today, could you?
No, I could not.
No, but you could run. What's that silly bike program that you're a part of?
Peloton.
What's Peloton?
Peloton is a cycler's dream.
Okay, so you go on the bike and you have a video and you actually take a course and you try and keep up with people, strangers. Do you get
thousands and thousands of people all over the
country? But you can't see each other at the same time, right? Can you see them?
No, I can see people in the class, but I can't see people cycling at home.
Always a live class? Or
you can do live classes any time of the day. You can do on-demand classes. You can go for a scenic ride, which I did the other day with Liam. He sat on the handlebars, and we took a scenic ride through Taiwan.
Okay, Liam didn't sit on the handlebars for longer than 20 seconds, because
he sat for a good minute. It was impressive.
That was a minute workout. I mean, that's a record. And how long do you usually ride that silly bike for?
About an hour.
You ride that bike for an hour, and it's like an intense, what do you call it, spin class?
Yeah, I burn like 1,000 calories.
That's crazy.
It's awesome.
Now, Sunshine, have you ever seen
your sister do this or what?
No, I haven't, but I am familiar with the program. And,
oh, you do it too?
No, I don't do that. But I know it's a good workout. Yeah. People love it.
And Ethan, do you do any workout at all?
I chop wood.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last time, baby James was chopping wood and his back was out for a month. I don't know if that's the best exercise.
It's actually a very good exercise. I mean, yeah, that's basically what CrossFit. Yeah. CrossFit, they have the people take the sledgehammers and slam the tires like they're chopping wood, but they don't actually get anything done.
Let me just say to Jason, the entire video of Jason lifting is up on Hannity.com. I think we just took a video because I see Sleeping Beauty is here taking videos of the show.
You know, and he's actually very fit, too.
No, he used to do marathons.
Still does.
Well, what do you call the bigger?
He's a triathlon. He's a triathlete.
I put Blair on the microphone. So you did triathlons. Describe what a triathlon is.
Ironman.
What did you?
Ironman.
What is the Ironman? What do you got to do?
Blair.
What is an Ironman? You got to explain it. It's radio. What's wrong with you people?
It's a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and then a marathon, 26.2 miles.
Wait, say it again.
2.4-mile swim.
All right. If anyone does that alone, you're dead. Go ahead.
The 112-mile bike.
I could do that easier than anything. How long does that take?
It takes me about 5 hours and 15 minutes.
And how long does it take you to do the swim?
About 56 minutes.
Okay. And then then you do a full-on marathon after that.
Marathon, yeah.
And how many hours total do you get it done in?
The best I've ever done is 9:52.
9 hours and 52 minutes of nonstop exercise. What do you feel like the next day?
Death.
Death. And when you train for it, you can't actually train and actually do a full Ironman, right?
No, you just do a lot of biking, a lot of running.
And do you still do this? Is that maybe why you're always sick and in the hospital? Because you're breaking everything, because you're pushing your body over the limit?
I work with Linda, and she's just a slave driver.
You're welcome.
Oh, listen, I'm not disagreeing, but you better be careful there, Handsome, because, you know, she saved your Sleeping Beauty. And if I start talking about that story, you're not going to like it.
Yeah,
all right, but let me just say publicly to Jason, rock star, very impressive. I'm very proud of you. I didn't even think about you following up because I didn't think you were going to follow up. And not only that, instead of 10, how many times did you do the reps? How many reps did you actually get in and all that?
I ended up doing 21.
So that 230 bench pressing.
Yes.
For the record, we all said he could do it. You were the only one who did not have any faith.
Well, I wanted to see if he could because he gives me such a hard time about
my... You thought I was going to be a tremendous failure. You didn't think I'd do the video. You didn't think I could
do
the weights.
No, I didn't.
Geez, you think so little of me.
No, it's not. I think a lot of you...
I think what's really funny...
is that he did it.
Can you finish? I think what was really...
Can you finish?
Can you finish? I can.
Yeah.
Reclaiming my time.
If anybody knows Sean, they know that's his famous line. Can I finish? But in all seriousness, I think what's really funny is that the money that he used to make, you know, how he earned this money, he's going to spend it all on beer and things that are going to make his belly bigger, which is actually really funny.
What do you do? What you're going to spend it on? Have you been talking about it in there while I'm actually working?
No, I'm not sure yet. I just got it.
All right. Well, do I pay my debts? I made a bet. I lost the bet.
And then some.
And then some. And then I'm proud. And I'm saying publicly, I'm really proud of you. And I think it's amazing that you did that. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm not going to be where you think I'm going to be this weekend. So the money isn't going to be
half
spent.
You mean where you usually are on the weekend? Coyote Ugly.
He needs those small bills for next weekend.
Oh, where are you going next weekend?
Back to Coyote Ugly, obviously. It's always a return.
This weekend, I'm off from there.
What do you mean you're off from there? Why do you take off from a weekend of your usual place? What is that all about?
They're updating the polls.
That's cold? It's closed?
There are no polls. No polls.
That didn't work
for those that never saw the movie Coyote Ugly, it is a real bar with two locations in New York, and that's where, for whatever reason, Jason hangs out, which is why Jason is not married, because that's not the place you're going to go.
One of the reasons why I'm not married.
That's not the place you're going to go if you wanted to get married.
First of all, even if
and by the way, there's no naked people in there.
You can go there if you're married.
Every weekend?
I mean,
every weekend? Really? Every weekend?
They have a very good selection of beer.
Okay. Every weekend?
I'm just saying.
Hell no, H2O. I remember
the
movie.
That's not in the marriage vows. I'm pretty darn sure you're allowed to have that beer.
Edition of The Devil Went Down to Georgia in the history of mankind is on that bar in that movie. But that's
one of their songs.
So now that you have an extra $500, why wouldn't you go to the usual hangout? I want to know.
I have plans this weekend that don't include the bar.
Oh, you have plans this weekend? You have a date this weekend?
Yes.
Really? How long have you been dating her?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
No,
well, he picked her up on the bar last week.
Did you meet her at the bar, really?
Actually, I did.
Wow.
Oh, see, I told you.
Well, I said that's not where you would usually go if you wanted to get married.
Oh, that's the operative word,
usually? If you wanted to get a girlfriend, that would not be the place.
If you want to stay married, that's where you meet
your future wife. Am I right? That's not the place you'd go to find a girlfriend, usually. If you wanted to find a real, steady, serious girlfriend, you wouldn't go there first off, right?
Probably not.
Thank you.
You probably wouldn't
checkmate.
Have a take-her-home-to-mom type girl there.
Listen, I'm not saying anything about the people that go there. All I'm saying is it wouldn't be the place you go if you want to
meet. But see, now
your soulmate.
He's going to stay married because they met there. So when he says, but honey, I met you there. Let's go together. This is a couple that'll stay together forever.
Okay, it's a great spin on your part. It's a great, great
narrative. Got to find
narrative.
Commonality.
The commonality of Coyote Ugly is really going to work into your 70s. I can see that happening.
A couple that
foundation
dances on a
forever.
Bar together stays together.
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly. Well, in all seriousness, I'm very proud of you. You did a great job on the video. Everybody can see it. We put it up on Hannity.com. And Blair came in to watch me pay the money, and I counted it out. All right, let's go back to our phones. Oh, Nikki is in Austin, Texas. Nikki, hi, how are you? Glad you called.
Hi, Sean. First time caller.
Thank
fan.
You. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I wanted to call and add my voice to the Black Rifle Company coffee. I just did my third online order yesterday, and I turned on the radio, and they were on the radio with you. And I wanted to say that the reason I initially ordered coffee from them is because I wanted to support their endeavor. And
yep. It's the best coffee, right?
Exactly. The reason I continue and have suggested that other people try it is it's really good coffee. It's good, strong coffee, which you can't make a strong cup of coffee on a Keurig ever.
I only like dark, strong roast. As a matter of fact, the strongest possible roast ever. Anyway, thanks, Nikki. We appreciate it. Let's say hi to Melissa, Sarasota, Florida. What's up, Melissa? How are you?
I'm great, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Wonderful. I'm calling because I am a guardian ad litem in the state of Florida, which is a court-appointed child advocate.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see anybody connecting the dots with, if you look at the fatherless home increased by decade, okay, since the 70s, and compare that to the mass shooting in schools increased by decade, it is almost identical. And that is the root of the problem, the breakdown of the nuclear family. I sit in family court every week, and it's just absolutely horrendous what's going on. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I got to tell you something. What we have seen, there's no doubt about it, and I give this family that took this kid in all the credit in the world. I don't know this. Nobody ever knows what's really going on in some inside somebody's home. You can speculate all you want. And when I heard the parents say that they had no idea, of course you believe them. The only thing I might have taken issue with is that the firearms can't be available to any kid. I could tell you, in my house, with my Liberty safes, I could tell you where my firearms are, and you're never going to get to them. Honestly, unless you bring like dynamite and blow up the safe. And I don't even think you could blow it up. And I'm just using that as an example. That's how secure you want to keep firearms. And, you know, there is this natural curiosity sometimes the kids have as it relates to firearms. And that's the scary part. And I'm not judging them. I'm not saying they made a mistake. I'm just saying that we've got to understand, especially if the kid got kicked out of school and the kid couldn't bring a backpack to school and, you know, the cops were there 39 times, I don't think I would have let that kid have a gun. That's my thinking. And he was going to get psychiatric help. So, yeah, every single level in this case, the ball was dropped. It's so sad because it's so preventable.
Would there have been a warrant, a FISA warrant granted without the inclusion of the Steele dossier?
I think, and the only testimony we have on this, is that it was a part of the complete whole of the application, and all the parts were important. So I don't know that I can answer that except to say I think it was important. I'll also say this, though. There's been a lot made about the fact that some of the Steele reporting at the time that was included was uncorroborated. That's true of almost every warrant application. If search warrant applications and criminal wiretap applications and FISA court applications could only rely on things that were proven and verified, you'd have very few of them.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Let me tell you everything we've got going on tonight on Hannity. All right, so 9 Eastern, the great one, Mark Levin, rare appearance. He joins us tonight. Sarah Carter, Tommy Lahren, and Dan Bongino. Reince Priebus also joins us. Look, we've got stories on the Florida shooting. Ken Starr is now saying Mueller has gone way beyond his mandate. We have literally no evidence of collusion. While all this is happening, Putin is out there, you know, taunting America, saying, oh, my nukes can beat yours. Then we've got an Oakland mayor that's out there literally saying, hey, by the way, immigration is coming, and literally putting harm's way, people in harm's way. So we'll get to that, and we are going to go after the media in a massive way tonight and so much more. So set your DVR, Hannity, tonight on the Fox News Channel, 9 Eastern. We hope you'll join us, and we'll see you tonight at 9 back here tomorrow.